two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
D Hard Knock Radio hanging out with you this afternoon. Wanted to talk to a good friend of the show. Her name is Professor Tina Bell Wright. She's the author of an excellent book called 360 Degrees, The Blueprint to Black Self-Determination. We've had her on where she talked about the culmination of her writings, which are featured in that book, A Blueprint for Liberation for Black Folks. There were two articles that were posted earlier this month that were spot on. One was written by Tina. It is called The Balkanization of America. I think I got the title right.
The Balkanization of a Nation, yeah.
Balkanization of a Nation, there you go. And right alongside it was another article called The Authoritarian Radicalization of Trumpist America. Both of them are remarkable articles. The second one, The Trumpist, is written by Omar Hagg. But you both are parallel in your analysis. And as we're sitting here, several things I'm noticing are starting to happen. One, we're starting to see an increasing number of newscasts, corporate media, pay attention to the former president. They're running his quotes, even though he's not tweeting. You know, I'm subjected, if you're watching, right, listening to, this is what he thinks. He doesn't like the Olympians. He doesn't like, you know, he doesn't like the football players. So we're back to that again, which is very disturbing. And it's done in a way that it totally eclipses any sort of movement that is going on in, you know, under the Biden administration and others who may be fighting for some sort of movement in another direction.
Right.
The second thing that we're seeing is a precipitous decline in the popularity and even acceptance of the Democratic Party. You're seeing that Joe Biden has dropped, at least in the polls, if you believe that, by 16% over the last 2 months. He is below 50%, with 55% saying they absolutely do not like the job he's doing. They're citing the Afghanistan situation. They're citing the surge of COVID, and they're citing, you know, broken promises. You know, people wanted police reform, it ain't come. They wanted the ending of student loans, it ain't come. And right, even though a Supreme Court just said that, you know, evictions can now continue, they're laying that on his feet as well for not bringing, you know, some reining in the Trumponian type of policies. So we have that. Locally, we're seeing that in the recall election, and maybe we could jump off there because you are in Southern Cali. But there seems to be a disinterest, even though somebody who is pretty clear that he's crazy, intends to bring craziness to the office if elected. Folks is like, yeah, I'm good. Let's talk about this disinterest. And I think it's been described, you know, as you say, the balkanization, some people would say the fractioning of a Democratic Party, which was pretty tedious from, you know, from the beginning, but now it seems like it might be etched in.
Yeah, so thanks, Davey. I appreciate that, kind of framing because, yeah, there's so much going on. It's hard to even know where to start. So let's start with the recall and the crazy you speak of that's in blackface, right? Can win like with 10% of the vote if the recall goes down as yes, recall. Whoever gets, the most votes, it can be way less than a majority will be the new governor for the rest of the term. But the one thing I would say for in California's case, because the politic here is for the most part, especially surrounding big cities, going in a different direction, would be, the legislation is still very much Democratic and so on. But what I feel like we're going to see, possibly, already seeing on the national level, if, for example, Republicans win back 2022, is just kind of a US apartheid type state, right? And minority will be ruling, and you're going to have to get in where you fit in, and it'll become even more balkanized where people are going to have to gravitate to where they feel they can still breathe and live. And yeah, that's kind of where I see it going is in terms of the politic. People, live very much in the here and now and don't really follow and understand trajectory and vision for what's coming, what's being set up. Hopefully folks, especially Black folks, understand that we still very much live under Dred Scott, that they don't see us as having any kind of rights from the Constitution. And apartheid type living is very, very possible, especially because there's a minority who want to keep power by any means, which brings me to the census, what we've talked about many times before, demographic shifts and all. They are part of, what's fueling it. But they understand that, through basically power, politics, they can, do what they want regardless.
Let's talk about some of the key points that you brought out in the balkanization article that you can find on Medium if you look up Balkanization of a Nation by Tina Bell Wright. You lay out some pretty interesting fault lines, vaccine versus unvaccine, red state versus blue state, and there's a host of others. But let's talk about this balkanization because I think there's a romanticizing, and maybe even, I'll call it a delusion. Like it's okay, me and my people, we're just gonna stay, in our corner of the world and we'll be good. We'll have mutual aid, it'll be self-sufficient, and we don't need nobody. But part of what your article brings out, and definitely the article about authoritarianism, radicalization, by Umar Haig, is that that's not good enough for folks. It's like, nah, I want to disrupt your peace. Because that is part of my identity to disrupt the peace. And I think you've all often talked about, part of this thing with minority rule, apartheid rule, is that you fear the majority so much that you have to bash down just on GP against anybody just to reassert. Let's talk a little bit about that.
No, absolutely. To have peace, like for example, I'm on a little Blacksit tour. I've spent the last month in Bahamas. You would have to leave this country. I'm going to be, quite honest, or you have to stay somewhere extremely rural where they're not really looking for you. But otherwise, there will be no peace because one, they're radicalizing a decent 30, 40% of this country who will do crazy things like come up to you and, rip mask off or holler at, little league games, start fights, so on and so forth, because they are so radicalized around their beliefs that they feel like, no, your existence is the problem, right? They don't want you here, type of thing. And so there is no, I don't see any peace for the foreseeable future in this country. And it's you know, it's dangerous on the micro level where you're just trying to kind of live day to day and take care of your family. And, you know, a law can change overnight like this eviction moratorium. And now you don't know what's going to happen, to just, you know, bigger things like that are going to be coming now that you have a Supreme Court that, you know, is going to be ruling conservative for however long is to come. So I don't see peace. I don't see peace here in this country for a while. I see that you might be able to kind of survive kind of politically in very blue city oases, but you're going to have a lot of the problems, like maybe taking funding away, you know, that type of stuff. They get back in the federal government, so on. And so, yeah, unless, you know, big cities start to secede, it's going to be very, very difficult.
In looking at the context of Black self-determination, what is the path that needs to be taken moving forward?
Well, so the book, I lay out like a number of different things in terms of like one, and one which folks don't really, you know, probably don't pay enough attention to is media literacy. You talked about it before. So not only are cities, states, and so on becoming balkanized, but so is the media. And, you know, it's been for a long time, but it's getting worse and worse. The framing, as you say, you know, is becoming more and more obvious to folks that are literate, media literate. And so media literacy is critical, understanding how media rules our lives. Like, you know, Malcolm X said, you know, makes the innocent guilty and the guilty innocent. Knowing and understanding and all of that, making sure that, you know, our people are getting the right media framing and literacy to navigate it all is going to be critical. But the biggest part is going to have to be like coming to an understanding of reality in this country, where we are, what we have in terms of wealth, what, you know, how easy it would be to become, you know, kind of like South Africa for Black people in not the, you know, soon future, if you will, without mad organizing, you know, organizing folks, you know, it have to be vigilant always, which is extremely tiring. People, you know, have to live their lives, but I just don't see us being able to really build here without always being organized and vigilant.
But even within the Black community, we've seen a balkanization.
Sure.
That has emerged, and it seems like it's coming to an apex after a good 15, 20 years of constantly trying to find an angle to peel away particular aspects. It seems like the fault line is with, you know, Black males.
Right.
In particular, those that have maybe been a bit conservative or have a belief system that has now been subjected to being called toxic, that has been subjected to being canceled, that has, you know, resulted in, you know, I wouldn't say, obviously not the majority, but a significant number that have become quite resentful and ironically are starting to align themselves with some of that conservative right-wing type of ideology. I mean, the other day I saw, you know, a post going around that was talking about vaccinations, and they were like, you know, don't quit your job, let them fire you, blah, 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 which is false information, because if you get fired, you don't collect unemployment.
Correct.
But what I saw was, it was being passed around by Black folks who, you know, some of them consider themselves revolutionary or even radical, but it was coming from, but the authors of the post and the people behind it, the Free Speech Foundation and the National Doctors Frontline or something like that, were all right wing, you know, Heritage right. Foundation, Tea Party.
Right.
That's where this all comes from. We saw this in the early 2000s when Obama got into office, when a lot of radical Black folks started aligning themselves with Alex Jones, and you couldn't tell them anything for a while until he finally showed his colors. And it's like, you were good for the ride to validate, but I don't like you either. It seems like that's a repeat, but with much more sophistication. And as people are, as you pointed out, separating on, among vaccinated versus unvaccinated, that becomes the linchpin in which people will find themselves on the same side with some of these very radicalized right-wing forces that you write about.
Right. And I don't know if you remember an essay way back, I mentioned kind of like how the Koch brothers and their sense of libertarianism, people don't know, but they're going through different venues, including, you know, a lot of those brothers you speak of get a lot of their knowledge off YouTube, right? And getting radicalized off of YouTube and certain Black men in particular on YouTube. And so I think one of the points that Umair makes in his essay is critical in terms of beliefs versus knowledge and facts, right? We all live a very subjective reality where, you know, what I'm doing here, very different than what people are going through, you know, right now in Louisiana, which is very different than folks on the ground in Afghanistan. You know, time, space, and place matters tremendously to what you experience. But we have in the last, you know, it's been coming, but it's been accelerated in the last, since Obama, really, since the fear of the Black Panther had a face situation where folks no longer have a rationality about them in terms of really kind of like looking at things constructively, looking at the science, looking at the knowledge on it, all of that type of thing. They listen to an echo chamber. They believe what they believe. It doesn't matter if it's true or not. Basically, everything is subjective. And that's just not the case. That's what we're living with. I don't know if you saw that revisioning of the 1972 MIT study that, you know, we're looking at 2040, where the collapse of civilization in this country due to things like climate change and you know, human belief systems and so on is around the corner. It's not that far off. And we see glimpses of it every day. And so this, everyone living by their beliefs, not only is balkanizing us, but it's, you know, there's consequence, you know, universal law, there's going to be consequences to it. And we're seeing it in the Black community as well. We're seeing folks that are only, you know, not going to listen to reason, not going to like look at different sources and make sure that what they're seeing is really, you know, close to truth and fact. And so, yeah, it's quite dangerous.
So beliefs coming to fact, becoming fact, I think on the surface, everybody goes, I have a strong belief. But I guess it's drawn out when you start to look and see that people absolutely believe the 2020 election was stolen. They absolutely believe that what took place January 6th was just. They absolutely believe that those who defended the January 6th insurrection were the enemy, and they need to one day be punished. And, you know, if power returns to that ilk of people, punishment will be meted out.
It absolutely will.
So maybe people listening may find that, like, you know, hard to believe that people would absolutely believe that, but there are also people on our side of the track who hold similar type of beliefs. You know, gays are eroding our community.
Right.
Immigrants are the problem. You know, vaccines are, you know, all these different types of things that are so ingrained that I think is described both by you and Omar in your respective articles become part of the identity of people. Go ahead.
No, it's definitely part. It's their existence. You know, James Baldwin, one of my favorite writers, talks about kind of like a big part of whiteness in this country is they've bought into a delusion, and that's their whole reality, and they cannot be what they think they are without its ideas of white supremacy and so on. But I do want to kind of point out the difference between these folks who are being radicalized via media, via politicians, via so on, versus the actual politicians who are just very cynical, right? They will do whatever they need to do in order to keep power. So whether they believe it or not, doesn't matter. They'll absolutely sell it and say it and repeat it over and over again to radicalize their voters to make sure that they can keep power. And so that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with, and you know, through things like gerrymandering, through things like legislation being controlled by Republicans, it's very probable that even though nationally you would think, you know, it's moving in one direction, power-wise can be moving, you know, pendulum switch back very quickly as, you know, in a year or two. So I do think that we have to first really understand where we are and that reality. And like you said, we have schisms even within our community. I do have some, I wouldn't say hope, because I don't, you know, to me, you know, I always say hope is not a strategy, but I look at new gen coming up and some navigation that's going on there that I feel like is going in the right direction. There's this one brother that, you know, I don't subscribe to everything, but I see him online, the Conscious Lee, who as a young Black male face influencer is speaking to some of the issues, especially among Black men, that I haven't seen in a public space in a while. I will say this though, social media, you know, blessing and a curse in a lot of ways. Everyone wants to be a celebrity. Celebrity culture can be, you know, very toxic and also can be very scripted, just like how music, you know, the music industry, like, you know, you want to be popular, these are the things. Mm-hmm. Same thing with that. The reality for me is, you know, humanity is both the, you know, problem and solution. That's the paradox we live in, right? And it's finding the balance to, you know, figure out how people, how folks are easily influenced, how folks, the psyche of folks, to understand, you know, how folks fall into their beliefs and attitudes versus organizing around common solutions. So, you know, nobody's going to be 100% the same in their ideas, beliefs, identity, and so on. You know, I raised two children in the same household, they couldn't be more different, right? So you have that, but you have to have an understanding of how you want to organize around, you know, the solutions that we do agree on. And that is what we have to work on as a community.
Professor Tina Bell Wright is with us, the author of the book, 360 Degrees, A Blueprint for Black Self-Determination, talking about some of her latest writings and articles that actually kind of go along with some of the things she's been talking about. Her most recent article, The Balkanization of a Nation. Tina, your specialty is media justice, media literacy. So let's talk a little bit about this for a moment. My understanding has always been that in media, and this is what I've seen practiced when I was at places like Clear Channel, because this is where I've seen them execute this, their ethos was form a bad habit that people can't quit. And you do that through repetition. Right. And it usually takes about a year. If you move something for about a year, say the slogan over and over, push the ideology over and over, in this case, repeat the lie over and over and have it echoed and re-echoed, it becomes a habit that people can't quit. I'm saying that to now move to other aspects that would reinforce particular beliefs. And we're looking at the systematic, but very deliberate and theoretical, methodical way mm-hmm. in which history is being rewritten and removed.
Right.
So in textbooks, Dolores Huerta is gone. in textbooks, Martin Luther King is gone. Or, you know, some key aspects, the March on Washington is gone.
Right.
Letters from a Birmingham jail. And the redefining of critical race theory, now meaning just talking about race, and is now defined as talking about race in a way in which it makes people feel uncomfortable, is now on the chopping block in more than a dozen states around the country, with more to come. You know, and you talked about if people get into power, then they start to defund, you know, universities and all that. So then it's all across the board.
Right.
What happens when we start to have a new iteration of what I would call book burning? It's not burning of the books literally, but it's like, you're not, it's going to be like jail. You can't read, you know, George Jackson's Blood in My Eye in any prison in California. Well, you're not going to be able to read the autobiography of Malcolm X to talk about the Black Panthers in any schooling, you know, in this country. So let's talk a little bit about that, because it seems like it sets us up for bad habits and beliefs that we won't be able to quit.
So, yeah, let me start with the media. Just the power of the media. Like, you started the program, you talked about how, you know, Biden's numbers have dropped quickly, and they, you know, would drop anyway to an extent. But watching media coverage for the last 2-3 weeks or so, you'll see a direct, it directly affects or correlates with the poll dropping. So however the media is framing things, that becomes kind of the mass understanding of it. And that becomes the opinion, right, that you then go and poll and see. And so if the media was framing differently, you wouldn't see that same drop. So that is the power of it, right? However the media is framing, it does not reflect reality, it creates it. And so we need to keep that, we need to understand at all times that media does not reflect reality, it creates reality. And the reality that it can create with that power, and especially with the, you know, power of the politic and having the media used to just send out whatever message they want, is basically not only kind of a balkanization of ideas and opinions and beliefs, but it is going to be to the point where, you know, now you're living in a, you know, a police state. You may not know it or feel it, but it's a police state because it's wiping out whatever real history there is. It's like how Umair talked about in terms of kind of Germany and Nazi and, you know, so on. It's fascism. It's the coming of fascism. And, you know, how I start the article is back in 2012, I was invited to be on a panel at the American Sociological Association, where I talked about kind of corporate fascism and the coming of, you know, what I see as that. And, you know, people then were like, you know, you can't use that kind of strong word, so on and so forth. And, you know, now almost, you know, a decade later or 9-10 years later, I'm seeing it, you know, used quite often all over the place, because that's what we're seeing. That's what's coming. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, then let's connect this with the erasing of history.
Yeah,
because we're talking about it in terms of media, but in today's society, classrooms are media.
Of course.
Universities are media. So let's talk. We're talking about the dissemination of knowledge to the masses.
Exactly.
So let's connect the dots with that.
Right. So you have to know and understand that, you know, media are mediums that, you know, like you said, give knowledge or give information. So it's, you know, beyond TV news, it's now social media, whatever, it's classrooms, it's billboard, it's all of that, right? So whatever mediums that bring across information and knowledge, and they're going to be more and more controlled by, you know, certain aspects trying to keep power, minority rule, if you will. And so in order to do that, they're whitewashing history, they're basically turning themselves into, you know, victims, which I think is what I wrote in another article. This is the delusion we're living in, because they see themselves as both the powerful and the victims.
Right? Yeah, that's a very profound section on that. Maybe we can repeat that again. So the white supremacists.
Right.
And people that buy into that system holds power, but sees themselves as the victim.
Right. And that to me is what the fall of empire looks like, you know, seeing themselves as both the powerful and the victim. And I do want to go back to kind of what you mentioned about Trump earlier and why he's, you know, why he's even such a factor, the face of this, the manifestation of all of this, if you will. Trump was, a lot of people didn't use the word, but I will, you know, I used it in writing quite a bit. Folks don't understand that, you know, he was a, you know, he's a con man, hustler, whatever, but he's also a eugenicist, right? He believes in, you know, good genes, if you will. And some of what Umair was talking about was this, these folks are being radicalized into this idea of, you know, the strong will survive and the weak, we need to get rid of them, right? The whatever they consider weak in their society. And so in this society, of course, they want to get rid of Black, Brown people because, you know, their idea of white supremacy is challenged by Black, Brown, not only changes in demography, but in power. And so this is a major idea that is being exploited as well through, you know, and callously through kind of the politic of right now, is this idea of kind of eugenicism, but not using the same language as before.
Well, let's even dig into that, because what was pointed out in that article was it's identified in this talk about masks. You know, wearing a mask is a sign of weakness.
Right.
Wearing a mask is an indication that you are quote unquote sheep. And the identity, you know, going back to this thing about beliefs versus facts, is now rooted in, you know, like my identity says that I cannot wear a mask because it goes against the very core of my identity, which sees me as being powerful in comparison with all these people, in particular Black and Brown people. And so this goes back to what we were saying before about there ain't going to be no peace. It's not enough that I'm wearing a mask and you're not.
Right.
Me wearing it is a problem. So now I'm going to walk up to you. And as we've been seeing in certain parts of the country where people feel they can get away with it, people are snatching them off the faces of folks, snatching it off the faces of little kids. Challenge, you know, this, what we see as sometimes funny when it shows up on YouTube, you know, these outraged individuals who walk into a store.
Right.
Let's talk, it's a lot deeper than the craziness that we laugh at in a YouTube video. It's a hardcore belief.
It is. It's, I mean, like I said, I do want to separate those that are kind of exploiting versus those that are actually honestly, and they're holding on to that belief because they, you know, one, it's their identity at this point, but they need to believe that instead of really believing that they've been, you know, they've been the sheep the whole time, right? Or they, or what I like I said, and I posted, I don't know if you saw, was that, you know, sheep that believe themselves to be lions reveal themselves to be parrots in a cage. Right. Okay. So basically they think that they're thinking for themselves and whatever. They don't really understand how they're being manipulated through whether media or politicians or whatever. You know, they'll just say, you know, whatever they hear repeated 100 times on whatever they're watching or whatever they're scrolling, and think themselves as thinking critically. And so it's very dangerous.
So how do we counter that?
I mean, you know, for me, it's always first accepting reality. And so folks that, you know, have to first understand what we're actually dealing with, and then you have to build a strategy and organize around that strategy. So intentionality for me is critical, just kind of, you know, which is why I go back to vigilance always, just kind of like saying, oh, this will blow over, whatever. Don't, you know, think that that's the necessarily the case. I mean, think about the fact that Trump, who was what, a TV personality basically, became president of, you know, what was at least then the most powerful country in the world, right? That should give folks pause or to really think about that. And not only that, to think that there are millions and millions of people that believe he not only should have been president, but he still should be, and that he will be again, you know, if not August 13th, someday coming up soon or whatever. That's where we're living. That is the society we're living in right now. And so first doing that, so setting up a strategy. So how are you going to build and keep community during these turbulent times? And there's some things that, you know, we'll need to do, you know, in terms of on the micro level, the mutual aid and all those type of things. But on the macro level, we're going to have to really start to promote and find ways to promote in media and around our community and have them build much more critical thinking, you know, like really media literacy and critical thinking.
But how do we teach critical thinking when people who hold these beliefs are standing sometimes in classrooms saying they're teaching critical thinking, but actually moving people in even more hibernating directions?
Right. No, that's very fair, because, you know, I'm a sociologist, and as sociologists, we do believe in social facts and building knowledge and that type of thing. But there is a sociologist or someone who taught sociology in another on another campus, a white woman who believed herself to be the victim, who believed that Black and brown people play victim. And that's what she taught in her class. And it was brought to my attention from a student that then we had to organize around, you know, rallying to get her not to be teaching the race and ethnic relations class anymore. And so it's like a constant, it's not going to be a, you know, one thing is going to fix it. I mean, if that happens, it's most likely a bottom we're going to hit, you know, a total destruction of this quote unquote society as we know it, and a rebuilding. So in the meanwhile, while navigating it, is going to be organizing around things like this all the time for yourself, your community, and so on. And possibly at the same time, which is what I'm talking about in 360 parallel, if you will, building own and understanding the importance of building own and power as control. So always understanding, you know, what do we control? What don't we control? How can we kind of divest from things we don't control and invest more in things we do control?
Professor Tina Bell Wright, we were talking about identity and that the proverbial white supremacists have rooted in their identity, themselves being the manifestation of strength.
Right.
So you don't get vaccined, you don't wear masks, and you smash on anybody who does because it's a sign of weakness. Part of that is also American exceptionalism. So right. that was always a big part of it. So waving the flag and how dare you sit during the anthem, you know, I'm offended. Right. This is, you know, we're America, USA, USA.
Right.
But another part of identity goes on the other side of the track, and it's the eternal reactionary. Right. How do we avoid being that reaction? You know, people feel like if they're not reacting to Fox News, so I got to go on there and I got to defend us. If I'm not reacting to every Trump tweet, you know, right, even if he's not the president, if I'm not reacting, or we might use the word struggle.
Right.
You know, then my identity is kind of lost in the wind.
True. Right.
And so that's built up for a long time. And when people don't see us reacting, then they're looking for an enemy. They're looking for fault. Right. And, you know, they'll cancel. They'll kick up dust, become disruptive because we're not reacting, you know, and they feel that is part of the identity. To the point it may be the identity of Blackness.
No, absolutely. It's been built into kind of a lot of movements because we've had to, right? We were enslaved. We had to react to that, and be abolitionists and so on. A lot of what we've had to deal with as oppressed and repressed has had to be reactionary, and and there's going to always be continuous some level of reaction. So when someone, is now not protected by the moratorium, they're going to have to react to being thrown out of their place and so on. However, planning and again, trajectory and vision will have you know what's coming, right? And be prepared for that. I saw a post by Black socialists in America on Twitter the other day that I thought was like spot on. And so I wanted to share that because it speaks to exactly what you're talking about. They said, some of y'all aren't talking about systems change when you say revolution. Some of you are talking about regime change. Seizure of state power does not equate to revolution, at least not a social one. And we need a social revolution well before dealing with state power, a shift in consciousness that informs a radical shift in terms of how we relate to one another will inform revolution around power and production. And we can't have a social revolution without direct democracy and cooperation in our social organization. And so that's why in 360, we deal with a lot of issues of cooperatives, direct democracy, building our own systems around that, and so on.
But Tina, Professor Wright, I mean, I hear you, but I don't want all that.
No, people don't want that work.
I want
People don't want that work.
I want a nice house. I want a
Right.
nice car. I want to have the comfort, the creature comforts that I see everybody else have. And
Right.
that's what I'm going for. So,
And
yeah.
that's what most people do. They don't, they just want a change of the face of the system, right? But you, in order for us to really live and be free, we're going to have a non-hierarchical system in our aspects, which 360 degrees is the circle, right? We can't just build a different hierarchical system. We have to understand that that will never free us.
Real talk. Let me ask you this as we're coming to the end. The hedging of bets. You said that where as the balkanization continues, and if we see a shift in party politics where we have overt oppression in our faces, if Mitch McConnell becomes the Senate leader and Kevin McCarthy out of California becomes the congressional leader. This is laid out because of the divisions that are happening within the left hemisphere of politics, where progressives are like, you know what, I'm not rolling, not voting for Newsom. I'm not voting again. You have that sort of attitude. And others who are demanding that people get in line and we have order. For them, the very thing that Dr. King talked about, the liberal is more interested in order than change. So you have those two dynamics. But with that being said, you said the end result is people will get in where they fit in. And so let me just kind of reference Roland Martin for a minute. He talked about all the people that were up in DC fighting for voting rights marches. And he started calling out other allies and said, why aren't you up here in Washington, D.C. too? Why aren't you fighting this fight with us? Why is it only Black organizations that are up here, on Capitol Hill demanding the passage of Voting Rights Act when this is going to affect all your communities? And we've seen this, we've seen this type of conversation emerge. And some people have come to the conclusion that others are hedging their bets. And it's like, you know what? Maybe I can get a piece of this whiteness. Maybe I can roll on this side of town and I'll be that accepted minority. Is that a reality that we have to deal with? Is that an over-exaggeration in what Roland was saying? Or are people really hedging their bets by having proximity to white supremacy?
No, I'm. They've always hedged their. There's always been a you know, constituent or faces that will hedge their bets in order to, because again, they deal in the here and now and not, you know, not too much of a visionary long term. And so in order to kind of protect, you know, what they have and who they are, whatever, they'll absolutely hedge their bets on that. So we have to, that has to be a part of our understanding, our strategy, all built in, right? That there will be folks that do this. So, you know, what are we going to do? I think that they'll, you know, and the power structure will always use that in order to keep others in line, which is why I don't think that, you know, just a reform of this system is going to do it long term for us, if you will. And, you know, part of one of the 360 tenets that, you know, I don't talk about, or we haven't talked about a lot, is Maroons as models, right? And the fact that, you know, when we were under this kind of duress, a lot of us left and just found some place, you know, where we could go run ourselves. And of course, they would try to come back and bring, you know, escaped enslaved African Americans back into slavery. And so it was always under duress. But many of them did thrive, and many of them thrived for generations. They just had strategies in order to deal with the that duress at all time. And that's basically what we have to develop.
Real talk. And so as we kind of wrap up, last comments from you, what, you know, I think you gave us an array of advice, but is there one thing that we should do in the next couple of weeks?
I mean, always kind of pay attention to, you know, how things are being framed, because if you're paying attention now, you'll know where things are going in the next weeks, months, and so on, and plan and strategize and organize accordingly. And then, you know, like you said, real talk, plan things that build things that you control, that you can kind of depend on when things fall apart. And going, but that's a, you know, book that I'll just throw out there that, you know, everyone should read if you haven't. But yeah, things will fall, things do fall apart, it will fall apart. And, you know, and think bigger, think like beyond, you know, your right now day and situation to kind of broader geopolitical situations and movement, and just pay attention, pay attention, pay attention.
You know, as you said that, you just reminded me, we tell ourselves we got to make time to go work out. We got to make time to spend time with our family. Maybe we have to make time to daydream and imagine, because we're under so much duress.
Absolutely.
That
absolutely.
We don't get a chance to really imagine, you know, a better world that, you know, becomes our guideline, you know,
no.
becomes.
Yeah, no, I'm so glad you said that, Davey, because I hope people realize how quickly things can and will change in terms of social structure and understanding, because things are, you know, we call it socially constructed, right, in sociology, and they can change on a dime. Like one minute, you know, you think K-12 schools work like this and it will always work like this and have always worked like this. And the next minute you're dealing with a deadly virus and, you know, the whole thing shifted. We have to have the imagination to understand that we can build different and better, and then start, you know, making those plans.
There you have it. Professor Tina Bell Wright, look out for her book, 360 Degrees, a blueprint for Black self-determination. Look for her writings on outlets like Medium, Professor Tina K. Wright, or K. Wright, because
right.
Christina starts with a K, not a C.
Right.
I call you Tina. So
right,
you know,
right. Everyone that knows me calls me Tina, but, you know, yeah. Government name.
It's Christina with a K.
With a K, right. But they're coming to look for me to pay some bills.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, look for her writing. It's chock full of information. She's prolific with it. And we appreciate you taking time out. We're going to take a break here on Hard Knock Radio.
Thank you,
we'll
David.
Right,
appreciate
back.
You. Appreciate you always. You.